I was telling the group that does a lot of AA stuff, I said, I don't want it to be another AA meeting in a church.
Okay.
Because there's so many of those, and we're so blessed to have them. It's not just another AA meeting in a church. It is AA and worship and Jesus. So it's a blend of those.
So it is a church.
So it's a church
in a way
for recovery people.
Yeah. Here today with the Right Reverend Robert Garvey, who goes by Bob.
I put down Bobby G on my
Bobby G works.
My friends call me Bobby G.
A friend.
That works. We're amongst friends.
He is a pastor of two different churches. One is West Willow United Methodist Church, and then Wesley United Methodist Church in Strasburg. Yeah. I don't know. You should introduce yourself.
Hello.
Well done.
Hello, yeah. Well, everyone. Done. Bob Garvey, pastor of, like Chris just said, West Willow United Methodist.
I mean, where are you from?
From Lancaster. Born and raised here in Lancaster.
Lancaster, or from one of the towns?
Born in Lancaster General Hospital. Okay. Grew up in Millersville.
Okay, yeah.
Went to Penn Manor School District. It's a great day to be a Comet. And spent most of my life here, went to college in Cornell University, Ithaca, New York. Moved west, sought my fortunes out west, Denver, Colorado for a couple of years.
I didn't realize you went that far west.
San Diego, California. I kept going west,
yeah.
San Diego for a number of years, and then came back home. Lancaster Theological Seminary.
Graduate.
Yep.
And on the track for ordination.
It's official. It is official. Yeah. I will become a provisional elder at our next annual conference.
That's right.
So that's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's moving up. You've been on this on our podcast before.
Yes, I'm a returning. Do you have any returning podcasters? Am I one of the first?
It's a good question.
I think you are the first return. Oh no. Daryl Stevens has done several podcasts, actually.
That is.
So you have a standard that you need to reach.
That's a high standard.
It is a high standard.
Dr. Stevens.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's done three. So
it's a high standard. And may I give a shout out to Pastor Jonette?
Yeah.
Shout out.
So our topic today is recovery ministry. And one of the reasons that I wanted you to come speak was because I hear through the grapevine that you have or are establishing a new recovery ministry at one of your churches.
Yes.
And I know this story connects to your life. This is a passion of yours. And so I thought I want to talk about it. And part of the reason I want to hear what you have to say about it is because here at Otterbein, recovery ministry is starting to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to encourage that
right
in the right way, in a right way. There's probably multiple right ways. But in a way that feels right, that mm-hmm. works right, that isn't forced, that isn't, you know, there's all kinds of wrong ways to do it. So I thought maybe you could help us by telling a little bit about your journey with this.
Sure. I think it would be helpful for the listeners to know my story. I had a problem drinking for 25 years of my adult life. So started drinking when I was 15.
Okay.
Dabbled in it earlier, but began to take it seriously probably when I was a freshman in high school. As I look back, certainly didn't realize it at the time, but it was a coping mechanism for a young teenage guy who didn't know how to handle life,
right?
Didn't know how to deal with my emotions. And so when I drank, it numbed me out and everything felt better. And so it felt, it was this safe little cocoon of alcohol. And I know a lot of folks who have that experience can relate, you know, that, that it was just, it was a, like I said, it was coping mechanism. Really, it was a crutch just instead of dealing with life. That was high school. When I got to college, I played football at Cornell. So the pressures of Division I football plus Ivy League academics meant that I needed to cope more, and so my drinking increased. When I graduated and got into real life, as we all know, pressure increased more.
Indeed.
And so I fell back on that crutch that I had. And it really wasn't until my first son, Bobby, was born that I said, I don't like this lifestyle. I don't like me, who I've become. And I really, that was really the first time I said, I need to get a handle on this. I need to stop this.
About how old were you?
So I would have been 24.
Okay.
Yeah. But it really wasn't a serious need to stop it.
It was a, I should stop
I should.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to put the brakes on this. But it wasn't, a desperate need. You need a desperate need, you know, by that time, the addiction had taken over. Right. And, you know, there's this saying about addiction, or maybe even just bad habits. When they first start off, they're too soft to notice. Right. But then when they take over, then they're too strong to break. And I'm messing up that analogy, but you get the hint, right? So by the time I said I really want to stop it, it was too strong to break. And so really for the next, let's say I was 24, for the next 16 years, I struggled in and out of it until when I was 40. That was when I was able to stop completely. On my 40th birthday, hung up my drinking boots and... I've been sober for 12 years.
So back to that.
Yeah.
Did you plan it for your birthday?
For me, it was helpful to draw a line in the sand.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all right, I'll be completely honest. The plan was to stop drinking for a decade.
Okay.
Because I had stopped drinking for a year before, totally stopped drinking for a year. And for folks in recovery, they know I was a dry drunk, meaning I had not changed my attitude towards drinking. Yeah. I just stopped it, but I still wanted it.
Yeah.
And I still saw it as a tool that could help me cope with life. But I'm just not going to drink for a year. And you can guess after a year on the next day,
you're like, okay,
I started drinking.
I did it.
And I did it. Yeah. I'm in control.
Right, right.
I can stop for a year, so I got a handle on this. And so, but I went quickly back to my old drinking habits. I'm like, well, that didn't work. All right, so I know if I go for a decade, I'm not willing to be unhappy for a decade and go without. So I said, I know I need to change my thinking. This will force me to change my thinking about alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so for that first decade, the first month went through and I said, okay, I got 9 more years and 11 months to go and I can drink again. And then 9 more years and 10 months to go. And so, but then that gradually started to fade. And I remember the day where I thought I might not ever have a drink again. And I cried like, oh my gosh, like I might not ever have a drink again. So then I'm learning how to live life without alcohol.
Yeah.
And I remember on that like 9th year, my mantra was still, if I can do a decade, that was the deal. Mm-hmm. Then I can drink again. And I was starting to get anxious about it. Like, this is coming up. Oh.
Like a little worried.
Yeah, there was anxiety going into me that the decade's coming up. That was the deal. I can drink again. Mm-hmm. And this anxiety and just this thoughts. And then it occurred to me, I'm happy sober, happy, filled with joy. Mm-hmm. It would be pure insanity to go back to that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It would be insanity to go back to that life. Like, why would I even consider that? Okay, well, one, I've still got that alcoholic mindset. And going back into that life, even if I could handle it, right, which is highly suspect, even if I can handle it, it means getting up in the morning and being consumed with drinking. Am I going to drink today? How much can I drink and get away with?
Yes.
When will I start? Will it be at home? Will it be at a bar? Right? There's all of this energy in that conversation. Why would I do that? And so that was, okay, that's, let's just let it go. Let's just make this a lifetime thing. And so that, you know, right, that was kind of the process. What I lament now is I did not go to AA. Went to a couple meetings, and the AA folks will know this. There's some meetings that are better than others. I went to ones that were just sad and depressing.
Yeah.
I'm like, this sucks. I'm not doing that. I can't do that. And so I went on my own, and I didn't have that community of people to help me.
Yeah.
And we have a number of folks in our church that are active in AA. And they've kind of pulled me into that community. And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a group of people that support each other and love each other. Mm-hmm. And so I really am remorseful that I went alone. I made it way harder on myself than I needed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Getting active. I was not a pastor when I was 40.
Okay.
You know, I think it was 42 or 43 when I stepped into pastoring. That helps significantly, having a faith community.
Yeah.
But not having that support system, I did it way harder than I needed to. But so interesting. Sober, I'm happy. Good. We got that done. And then God, as he so gently does, was nudging me to say, I want you to tell your story. Well, you know, growing up in Lancaster as a guy, I'm actually pretty introspective. I don't share my feelings or experiences and hard stuff. And so God's like, I want you to tell people about this.
Yeah.
No, that'd be a hard no, God. And he's like, oh, no. You need to.
What you're gonna do.
You're gonna share this. And again, it's gentle. It's not insisting, but this is, you know, this is right.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I remember the first time I preached on it. My hands were shaking with my manuscript. I was so nervous to share with people, you know, my journey.
Where was that nervousness coming from? What could happen?
People will judge me. Yeah, people will judge me. And I remember, you know, I wrote a long post on Facebook. Right? You know that post. Post about a conversation with God, about, you know, the struggle of giving up. And I wrote in that post that, God, if I admit that I have a problem with alcohol, everybody's going to know. And God said, Bob, everyone knows. You're the only one who doesn't know.
Yeah.
And all of these people have been praying for you,
yeah.
Right? And I'm like, oh, you're right. That's totally true. And so this fear of judgment, you know, and people do. People who don't have experience with addiction or have a family member with addiction, they judge.
I would say especially.
They judge, you know, and that's okay because they don't have that experience. It wasn't for them, that message.
Right.
It was for somebody who was struggling to say, here is what God has done in my life. And, you know, the other powerful part of that is as my faith grew, as my relationship with God grew, I asked why. Why? Why 25 years of alcoholism, 25 years of hell, right? Just why did you allow this? Did you do this to me? And it seemed like God's answer was that taught you lessons you would have never signed up for by yourself.
On purpose, yeah.
Yeah. Taught you compassion, mercy, submission, right? Leaning on me. All of these things, you would have never gone through that if I would have said this is the plan.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, isn't it interesting that as a pastor, those are my biggest gifts?
Mm-hmm.
Right? 25 years of alcoholism is my biggest gift as a pastor.
As a pastor.
What? Like that's that, and that's the good news, right? God takes the worst thing and makes it the best thing.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's one of there's two themes that we have been hitting on at the Revive Ministry, which is Thursday nights, 6:30 to 8 at West Willow Church.
Wait, can you say that again? When did those happen?
Huh?
When did those happen again?
Thursday night, West Willow Church, 118 West Willow Road. 6:30, we have a small meal, and then at 7, we all meet, and we do a little worship, and then we talk and stuff like that. It's been awesome. We've been doing it for, I think, 5 or 6 weeks now.
Okay.
The two themes are, one, that not only can you survive this addiction, but you can thrive from it. You can get to the point where you see it as the biggest blessing of your life. And if it was just me having that experience, I might not say that this is a universal theme, but that is a universal theme for most addicts or alcoholics that have come out on the other side. They said, I'm grateful that I've been through that. I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Yeah.
Which sounds silly, bizarre.
Yeah, it does.
You know, but that experience is the biggest blessing of my life. And also as a pastor, I'm not afraid to go into addiction situations, you know, where people's lives are just wrecked. I don't have any fear and I don't have any judgment. Mm-hmm. And that helps when people hear my story and they're in that situation. This guy's not judging me because he was there.
They're safe.
And they're safe. I can open up. But to be able to tell somebody in the middle of addiction, this will be the biggest blessing of your life. They could just hold on to that, like, wow, like that's amazing. Yeah. So that's theme one. Theme two, if you want to get clean and sober, hang out with clean and sober people who are happy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's key.
That would be key.
Don't hang out with clean and sober grumpy people.
Yeah.
Because you can be grumpy, drunk, and on drugs, you know. But it's the happiness part. To be around clean, sober, happy people. All right, what do they do? What tools do they use? Show me the way. Right? That's also powerful as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing. In many ways, our small recovery group at West Willow is the engine of the church.
Yes.
It is the engine.
I want to hear more about that.
It is the engine of the church, because when I'm up front talking about brokenness and sin and everything that we do to ourselves, there can be a tendency that a person who has not gone through that, you know, they look at me and they kind of turn their head like, I know you're not talking to me.
It's like a Western ricochet sound.
I know you're not talking to me, Pastor. Yeah. But the folks who have been through that, they're nodding their head.
Because they know.
Yes.
They know that they know that they know.
And when I say you have to be desperate for God and willing to submit, they're nodding.
Yeah.
Right? They're saying, yes, you're speaking to me. And to talk about a brokenness that is hell, right? The shame and the regret that you pile on yourself through those experiences, and that God has a path out of them. They know the power
of real good news.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I appreciate about those folks, two things, is one, we can really stick to the core of Jesus's message.
What do you mean?
Redemption.
Yeah.
New birth, new life. And we don't get caught up in some of these auxiliary conversations.
Why not?
Because they don't matter.
They don't matter.
Yeah. They don't matter. Right? And to be fair, they're important conversations, but they're not the most important conversations. Mm-hmm. And so we stick to what I think is the gospel, the good news, right? That God loves everybody and he died to save everybody. And that's where the power comes from, mm-hmm. right? The other thing that's wonderful with that group is they're more willing to share in a deeply vulnerable way. Mm. We had a gentleman who's in recovery ministry in Maryland. Shout out to Doc Howard, who came up and he plays in a band for us sometimes. Mm-hmm. Howard's a board certified foot surgeon.
Okay.
And he got into some trouble with alcohol and prescription medicine, lost his license. And Howard comes up and witnesses to our church, mm-hmm. and said, I destroyed my life over this addiction. Now, you know, you think addicts, you think, you know, people who are living on the street, who you know, don't have anything. And here's a doctor that is sharing his story that looks exactly like most people in the church. And so the vulnerability, the authenticity of that group not only moves people, but gives them permission to say, maybe it's okay if I admit my brokenness. Maybe it's okay if I let this guard down and be a little bit more open. And so, right, it's just people are letting the guards around their heart down, which, you know, that's how the Holy Spirit comes in. Mm-hmm. When we just are open, we're willing to submit. So, yeah, just it's been powerful. Yeah.
How do these gatherings, how do they function?
So what we will normally do, and a shout out to our Baptist brothers and sisters over at Grace Baptist, mm-hmm. in Lancaster, who have a program that's called Discover Recovery. Mm-hmm. I went there when I was thinking about launching this, just to get a model of what works. And so we've kind of followed theirs, where, you know, we'll have a meal, and then the goal is to have a speaker talk, maybe about their experience or maybe their understanding of one of the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. We use a lot of AA 12 steps in there. One, because it works. Two, it is a model of discipleship.
It is.
Yes. Yeah. A very clear, simple model of discipleship that matches really well with the Bible. And so we bring a lot of the AA stuff. You know, the first step of AA is to admit that you're powerless over alcohol,
right,
or drugs or whatever it is. It's submission, mm-hmm. right? Which all of us are so afraid to do, to say I'm powerless. But for somebody who's desperate and who has tried every other option and this is all that's left, that becomes the step they do. So we'll have a speaker give their experience or talk about a step, and then we just open it up for sharing. Yeah. And you know, in a community like that, this is one of the most powerful things that I've found, is if when you have the courage to open up and say, I've done this, right? I have prayed to God and promised him with every fiber of my soul that I am done drinking. I am done. And the next day I've got a beer in my hand.
Right.
Or the 20th beer in my hand. And right, the shame that elicits. Oh, it's awful. But to hear other people say, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've done that too. I'm not alone, right? I might be broken, but I'm not extra broken. just regular broken. To hear other people say, me too. Yeah, man, that sucks, dude. That's horrible. I feel you. And what addiction will do is it will separate you and it'll make you alone, right? Because you're ashamed.
Right.
You don't want to share. And that's where you get into trouble, when you're alone, right? And so just say, I'm not alone. That's powerful. Yeah.
You had mentioned that this in many ways is the engine of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Are all of these people that are involved in the church, in your church?
I would say probably 75%.
Okay, right, so there now are those who aren't.
Yeah.
Do you envision that, I mean, are you doing this as a recruitment tool? Or are you saying,
yes,
like, who cares?
Yes.
I just want so, them there?
So like, the people that come to our Revive ministry on Thursday nights are encouraged and welcome to come to church on Sunday.
Right.
That's it. That's a really good point, because as we were trying to brainstorm, what is this thing going to look like? I was telling the group that does a lot of AA stuff, I said, I don't want it to be another AA meeting in a church.
Okay.
Because there's so many of those, and we're so blessed to have them. It's not just another AA meeting in a church. It is AA and worship and Jesus. So it's a blend of those.
So it is a church.
So it's a church
in a way
for recovery people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we landed, because something interesting, a lot of AA folks have an aversion to church. Mm-hmm. And for many good reasons, right?
Absolutely.
Right, that maybe church doesn't understand addiction, comes across as judgmental, and you know, none of us get God's love perfectly, but sometimes it gets abusive and it does harm. And so a lot of AA folks are, I am not stepping foot in the church. The other thing with church is sometimes it can be superficial.
Sometimes.
Right.
Sometimes.
Well, many times. And so you're in an AA meeting and people are just pouring their hearts out and they're authentic. And then you get to church and
it's not.
It's not.
It's not the same.
And they're like, this is not remotely spiritual.
Yeah.
At all. You know, you would hope that it would be added, but it's less. Yeah. You know, and when some of the AA meetings that I go to, shout out to the Saturday morning group. At the 521 Club, it God's Spirit is just pouring. It's the most joyful place that I can be, right? Again, which is such a weird paradox. This group of broken people.
But it has the potential to be.
God's Spirit is just filling that place. And so when sometimes they'll go to church and it's kind of this superficial thing, they're like, ugh. So one, it is a bridge for folks who in recovery who might want to experience church, but what they've experienced is not, it's superficial, it's judgmental, right. You know, kind of all the bad things that any church can be.
Right.
It's a bridge for them, which I think is a wonderful opportunity. On the other side, there are many people suffering from addiction that are terrified of an AA meeting.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Terrified.
Just the stigma of it. Just
the stigma.
What is it? Or unfamiliarity with
it.
Yeah.
Right? There's no way. And almost everybody who's in an AA meeting did not go there by choice.
Ah, yeah.
Oh, I think I'm going to go to an AA meeting today.
Just for the fun of it.
Yeah. And I'm going to check it out, right? No, none of them. Yeah. It was the last option that they were forced to. And then they get there and it's this beautiful thing. And so our Revive ministry is kind of it's a two-way bridge. It goes, you know, hey, you're here. You see people who are active in AA who absolutely love it. Maybe that would be something you would consider. Maybe you would go on the arms of one of these folks and experience that. So it's a church for recovery people, but also an opening for people who might benefit from a AA program. Yeah.
There's something about it's
cool.
The recovery meetings that I've attended irregularly, at different stages in my life, there's something about them that always intrigues me. And you've spoken to a bunch of the reasons why. Like, most people don't want to go to one of these things unless they go to them. And then they really want to go to them. And, you know, in church, in just general church conversations, I hear, especially those who have been in church for decades, you know, why don't people want to be in a church anymore? And you know, you ask, well, why do you think? And they come up with various reasons. One of the things that I've been thinking about more recently is, why don't people want to be a part of a group gathering anymore? And the truth is, they do. They definitely want to be a part of a group gathering. I think there are fewer people that are engaging, yes, but they really want to be. So what is it about that gathering that keeps them going? And recovery groups are, it's a kind of group where you can be honest, and they are. And I've seen them just be overly honest.
Yeah, raw
compared to what public
conversation
normally allows, what etiquette normally allows, what, you know, in normal outside of that room conversation, you'd be oversharing. You'd be attention seeking. You'd be whatever the term would be.
There is a format in there in the AA meetings that it allows that to happen.
Yeah.
Which is, you're not allowed to project yourself into somebody else's story. I mean, you're not allowed to take that story and judge it from your own view. You have to accept that person's story.
That's just what they said. That's.
So, I mean, I haven't been going to any AA meetings or anything, but I do a cancer survivor program at the Y, and I run we call wisdom circles, like an AA meeting, where, you know, we propose a topic and they're allowed to discuss it. The individual is allowed to share their feelings, share their story, and then nobody else is allowed to respond to that.
It's no crosstalk, yeah. I think, is one of the phrase, ways, right? Yeah. That you're not chiming in, giving your opinion, me too, or this is what you should do with that. It is, they share, and then the next person shares. And that you know, puts a little bit of structure that provides some safety.
Well, it just allows you to be open without fear of judgment.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you're not supposed to judge as a Christian or in church, but that's usually the first thing you think about when you come into a church is, how are you being judged, you know?
Yeah.
Just by the individuals there.
And you know, we crave community, I think, because that's how we're designed.
Agreed.
Right? Mm-hmm. But we crave authentic community, not a superficial group of people that are judging each other.
Right.
You know? And you know, I find there is a significant overlap, just the courage to be part of a recovery group and to be open. I find that in the rugby community.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Because that's a tough sport, and to have the courage to do that, I find it in the jiu-jitsu community.
Yeah.
Any place that is hard and that people lean into, there is courage, you know? Some of the conversations I've had in jiu-jitsu community and the rugby community are facilitated by that bond of
suffering. Of endurance, perseverance. Yeah.
Yes. You know, all of the things that we shy away from in our very comfortable modern life, all of that is good for us. And I think God for sure puts us in positions where we can use that to grow, but we usually blame him for it.
Right.
Why are you doing this to
me?
But if you come out on the other side, we're like, wow, that was really
good
for me.
That was very helpful.
Yeah.
So looking ahead to recovery ministry, is there a vision going forward that's different than what it is now? Do you want to keep what's happening now
we need,
and keep
we
strengthening
need,
it?
We need musicians.
You need musicians.
We want to get some live music in there. And we need some cooks because we're serving hot dogs right now.
Okay, yeah.
Which are delicious. But, you know.
But there's a limit.
There's a limit to
what
you can do with hot dogs. And so, you know, we need some cooks. And we had some chili the other night, so we had chili dogs.
You know, you so still have the hot dogs.
We're getting there. You know, have our menu expanded, to have some live music. You know, nothing, you know, just guy with a guitar, maybe singing a song or two. Would work as well. But the other tie-in with this community, as I am stepping into provisional elder status, finishing up a couple core requirements for the United Methodist history and doctrine and polity.
Right. Yeah.
As you well know, the class structure of United Methodism when it was first starting out was these small groups of people who confessed to each other.
They asked difficult questions.
And supported each other and loved each other. That describes the Revive group. And we're going back to our roots in Methodism, you know, and you see that power that comes from that. And so there's a lot of tie-ins. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, and the food thing, I forget who says it all the time. Food is people glue.
Oh, you know, the other thing that I should add, the Revive group is open not only to people challenged with addictions, but friends and family.
How does that function? I've been to an NA group that had.
Right. There's good and bad. The good part, and I have encouraged our West Willow family, I said, hey, once we get this up and running, every one of you should come to a meeting. Because if you're not dealing with addiction yourself, you know somebody who is.
Right.
And you can say, hey, we got this cool little group meets Thursday nights, you know, that's chill. I'll bring you to that. Right. And so that helps overcome some of that fear.
Yeah.
But also, the two other things of the family members and friends who've come there. One, it gives them insight into how somebody dealing with alcohol addiction works. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you do this to yourself? Right. Well, here's
an example of
here's how I got there.
Yeah.
Here's how I got there, where this addiction just took over and I'm not excessively stupid or I'm not meaning to be self-destructive, but here's how I got there. So it gives them compassion. Mm-hmm. It also gives them some insights to that person in their life, not only to how they might think, but am I enabling them by continuing to let them stay in my house when they haven't had a job in 5 years and giving them money and all of that? Is that the most loving thing I can do? And to hear from somebody else to say, no, it wasn't until
this happened.
Everybody cut me off.
Yeah.
And all of the bridges were burned that I was forced to be at rock bottom that I would actually seek help. And giving them the courage to say, maybe I need to reevaluate, you know, my relationships, that I'm not loving this person. I'm really seeking their approval. And that has been powerful too, those conversations. Now, you know, having folks there who are not in addiction absolutely limits some of the sharing, right? Because you're thinking, well, they don't know what I've been through. And so we're working through that. But as I think it's a plus overall for the group. And there's always opportunities afterwards to connect with somebody, you know, that might know your experience better. Hey, can we have a cup of coffee later to talk about my situation, things like that. But the openness for friends and family, I think, is a huge plus right now.
We hosted at my previous congregation a group that was started by a man whose son had died from an overdose. And so part of his healing process was he sought training through the state for, I forget the name of the, not a degree or certification of some sort.
Right.
But it was to deal with this, with addiction and helping families, you know, going through addiction. And he started this group of family members of addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was solely family members of addicts. I think, I can't remember how many they got up to, but they became that connection and support for each other, where you could ask the questions like, my daughter is doing this, should I react in this way?
Yeah.
And you'd have someone who had been at it longer that could say, well, this is what happened when I did that, and helped them in this way. But I think one of the things that they struggled with is they didn't have any in the group that were addicts.
Right.
And so you miss that compassion. You miss that. I mean, there's compassion they would have for each other, helping each other as family members. It's not the same.
It adds a different element. And, but you know, that adds some risk. You need trust.
Yeah.
To be willing to be open to be, if you're the addict, to say, I'm one of these people that did this to you.
Right.
You know, and maybe reliving that. It wasn't you, but it was my parents that I put through this. But in a trusting setting, that can be healing for everybody.
That would be the key, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the key.
That's very powerful. For me,
yeah.
It is getting out the message that we've got this amazing program at West Willow Church, 6:30 to 8 on Thursday nights. All are welcome. I have this philosophy of launching new ministries that just wrecks my more organized people. Like, we're going to do it.
We're just going to do it.
We're going to figure it out on the way.
Yeah.
And it's sloppy and it's messy, but it's better that way than to plan for 2 years.
Have a binder.
Yeah,
and then
don't do bind, and that kills my more detail oriented folks, and I'm sorry.
What does a good church do that has groups in it?
I would think one way is to communicate to them that they are welcomed here. You're not just using our space.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. You are welcomed. Whether they want to embrace it or not, you're part of our community. Even though you might not be part of the congregation meeting on a Sunday morning, you're part of our, you're an important part of our community.
Yeah.
And we're so glad you're here. As you build a relationship with those groups, would any of them be willing to come and give their testimony to the church?
On a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Open invitation.
Because that would be powerful for everybody.
Yeah.
It would give them and maybe some of their friends and we're going to go support them as they do this to see what this church is.
That's an excellent idea.
Is it authentic or is it superficial and judgy?
Yeah.
You know, and open up those paths for interaction. Yeah.
I like that.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thanks for coming in. Jason. Appreciate Chris. Coming to talk.
No,
to
I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity to share this message that
you share it well.
That God pokes me constantly. So we're going to get some mileage out of this, man.
Yeah.
Tuned in today. We look forward to chatting again in the next episode of Hey Hey, Anybody Listening?
Hey, hey, anybody listening? Hey, hey.
Beautiful.